lighting a little hour or two, is gone. That is a striking image, especially for those of you who have ever known the desert and seen the exquisite beauty of a snow blanket on the dusty face, which in an hour or two is gone. Omar Khayyam is saying that our hope so often is like that. So many of us have experienced hope in just that way. Something dreadful happens to us, and then our well-intentioned friends come to us and pronounce the usual cliches. Don't give up hope. Where there's life, there's hope. Hope springs eternal from the human breast. And of course, we're all grateful for their good intentions. But so often, the hope that they are talking about turns out to be just wishful thinking. And soon it all turns to ashes. Soon, like the snow upon the desert's dusty face, it is gone. Gone in such stark contrast to the wishful thinking that is a part of our lives today. But the gospel of Jesus Christ does always continue to offer us an abiding hope, a hope that continues and gives us strength. I shall never forget the real life story about a young man in the Midwest who came from a middle class family and joined the General Motors Corporation because of the ideal he had since he was a boy. He was determined to advance in that great company. To do it, however, he had decided, if necessary, he would neglect his family, his friends, and his health, simply in order to keep rising to the top of that company, which had become his lifetime ambition since he was a student. And he did it, to the extent that when he was at the age of 40, he became the youngest general manager in the history of the Pontiac division of General Motors. A GM, he became something of a legend in his own time. But for him, that was only the first plateau. He kept moving up. By the time he was 48, he became a corporate vice president of General Motors at an annual salary of $800,000 a year, years ago. For him, it was the American dream come true. He had built his life all around that dream. And as he himself said at that time, all I need do now is coast for the next 15 years. Because he remained conscious of the possibility that he just might become the president of General Motors. And it was then that he entered midlife and he began to go through a difficult crisis. Midlife, middlescence, which we are beginning to understand is really more difficult to people than adolescence is. He began to be deeply troubled by things that he was beginning to discover about life. To begin with, a comparatively little thing, the golf pro at the club used by the GM top officials told him that the man who had just retired as president of General Motors, happened to be the loneliest man he had ever met. That this man came into the golf shop and talked to the golf pro for hours on end simply because he had no one else to talk with. And this really shook him up. Here he was, the vice president of one of the world's industrial giants. But what did that mean in his life? What did he really have? Where was he going? And instead of facing that question honestly, this poor man panicked, as so many people do in midlife, in middle-essence. He panicked and he began to jog harder than ever. He began lifting more weights, trying to prove to himself that his soul was young and strong. Next, he got rid of his wife, whose age happened to be the same as his own, because her very presence had become a sign to him that he himself was becoming older, and she was a threat to him. Next, he dyed his hair, and he married another woman much younger than he was. He did everything he could to cover up what was really happening to him. But there was no peace, only increasing restlessness. Like the rich man in today's gospel story, he had been painted into a corner. He had become trapped in what appeared to be a hopeless situation, and so, or at least he thought so. And that's why he married a third time, still looking, still searching for something to give him hope. But fortunately, at this time, something new began to enter his mind. Something happened to him. He began to realize that he had never had time in his entire life to really become aware of the other people around him. He had been so much like the rich man in the gospel, who continued to walk past people in need, the beggar at his own gate, and never took notice. He gradually, little by little, became aware of all the wrong that he had done to his first wife, and to his second wife, and to all the other people in his family and at work. And this new awareness even began to show up in his work. He began to try to explain to people at GM about the genuine concern they should have regarding automobile pollution. But that was too early. They did not believe him. And so finally he resigned his $800,000 a year position and took another job at a very small salary, working full-time with the National Alliance of Businessmen. And his job now was to work with the problem of unemployment, with the hardcore poor people, and also with ex-convicts. And he began to discover more and more deep satisfaction in what he was doing. He discovered they had given a large slice of his life to that American dream. The American dream. Only to see it gone like the desert snow after an hour or two. And he could no longer grasp anything. But now he recognized that he was a free man, no longer hopelessly trapped by his own self-centeredness. He was beginning to be a man of hope, who is able to understand the statement in total sincerity, to be able to say in his own words now that no amount of money or success could even remotely approach the feeling that he now experienced deep inside himself of what happens to you when you do something good for someone else. Those words reflect so beautifully the movement that we see today in philosophy called existentialism, which in essence simply is that the past has no reality, the future has no reality, only potential. The only thing that is real is the present moment of existence. So live in it now. Live it deeply and fully. Taste and smell and feel and love and hate and cry and laugh now in this moment. The Apostle Paul, in the very best sense of the term, was an existentialist. And Paul would say to us, live now in this present moment of existence that has been given to each of us. Because he himself, Paul, was always experiencing the fullness of God's love for him at each moment at a time. But for Paul, it did not end there. Paul was able to plant both feet on the ground, right here and now in the present moment. But at the same time, Paul was always able to look forward toward tomorrow. He was always filled with expectation, anticipation, desire, and longing. And those words are all words that describe the abiding kind of hope that we find in all of the letters that Paul wrote. Paul's hope, you see, is not wishful thinking. It is not the kind of hope that melts like snow in the dusty desert. It is hope that is grounded in the very being of the mystery of God, in whom we all live and move and have our very being. And because of the way that we know God's love for each moment, we also know that God is with us not only in this moment, but also in the future. And to know God's love for us now is to express it now. There is no way that we can experience God's love in the present moment and not reflect it at the same time. To live in the present moment and to express what is happening to us. Anyone who has truly an abiding hope finds it impossible to contain it. Because if you are not sharing it, you simply do not possess it. What a great day it will be for each of us when our love for the Lord Jesus Christ makes us secure enough, sensitive enough, to be able to give to others an abiding hope that they too someday can become the uniquely beautiful person that God has created each one of us to become. We cannot keep what we do not share.